Welcome in Lineup Logic, the MLB Daily Fantasy Podcast, bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate to come on FanDuel. I am your loyal host, Sean Cann, and I am back, and it is June 5th. We are in full swing, man. We are in full swing. I'm ready to get this going because this is the first time that I, strangely enough, launched this baby in January. At that time, had a little man at the house, my second son, Jack, 5 months old, launched the show. He has been my partner in crime throughout this whole thing, doing the dad slash analyst thing. But now, young Jack has set sail. He's in summer session down there at the daycare, got him in there with the other knucklehead, the toddler. And I am 100% focused, full-time DFS analyst now this summer, starting June 5th. So, you know, as much insight as a six-month-old can provide into the NBA season and then his maturity and age with advanced statistics came along during the baseball season. As much insight as the little fella can provide, I'm not gonna lie, it's a little bit easier to write up pitchers when you're not trying to worry about how warm the bottle is. Anyway, dad life, hashtag dad life. Hey, your dad out there, you guys know what I'm talking about. You can do anything. You do two things, four things at once, man. You got to get it all done. That's why God invented beer. Anyhow, aside from musings on life, I'm pumped. I'm ready to go. We're here. We're full swing. MLB season. I mean, we've got 2 months chock full of data. We've got some clear outliers as high quality teams. We've got some really interesting trends in pitchers who are rising and falling, and you know, some who have been very consistent, like Carmo today. Very interesting to talk about a guy who's just been pretty much the same guy since the start of the season. Very few, very little variance in what he has done. So certainly excited to jump into this Monday slate. And hey, if you're still interested, guys, I mean, I gotta say, you know, it is certainly a good time to jump into the Lineup Logic cheat sheet, the Lineup Logic community, the Slack channel chat. We've been adding guys. We added a few fellows, new guys last week. Shout out to those guys who jumped in there into the Lineup Logic chat. I got a couple of names that I got to make sure I get them into the Slack chat, get you invited, get you set up. But other than that, you know, very good stuff. And, you know, it's been hard. You know, playing MLB on a daily basis is truly a grind, and it is a challenge. And I think, you know, there's certainly some lessons to be learned, some things that we have to look at. And I actually want to take a second and go back to the Friday slate. It was a very interesting slate in my mind. So let's go back to the Friday slate and take a look and see what lessons we learned there. One of these nights. Okay, so you know, I think the one trend that I am identifying is, you know, Friday I had a range of outcomes pretty normal. You guys may know one of my strategies. I'll build anywhere from 4 to 6 lineups, and I try to strategically, what I'm going to try to do in those 4 to 6 lineups is I'm going to try to be above 50% exposure to certain teams in certain pitchers. So I will identify 2.5 teams, maybe 2 to 3 teams as far as stacks that I want to be overexposed to. Within those teams, I want to be 50% or more exposed to certain players. So on Friday night, for example, I had a above 50% exposure to the Tigers, which worked out really, really well. And I had a lot of JD Martinez and I had a lot of John Hicks, and that was really good. And then I basically decided that Strasburg, I had to have Strasburg everywhere. Lineup construction worked out that way. So I decided to have Strasburg everywhere. I went 100% in on Strasburg. I just liked his situation so much. I trusted it, you know, and it worked out pretty well. He went seven innings, got the quality start, seven Ks, a win, etc. But committing to a pitcher like that in a good situation does, you know, limit what other offensive options you have. And so, you know, I had Detroit was well priced. I liked them quite a bit. And it happened to be the night where they really picked it up and heated up and they scored 15 runs. It was great. It was a great situation to have Strasburg and the Tigers together. The other team that I had exposure to was the Rays. Now, the Rays, I got a little bit lucky because I basically had, I went 2-4-6. I went Kiermaier, Rasmus, and Morrison. Now, Morrison totally shit the bed, but Kiermaier and Rasmus did really well. And that lineup with Strasburg at the helm, the Detroit and Tampa Bay stack was 220. Came top four. It was a really nice tournament entry. Really, really pleased with that. You know, and you had to have you had to have Tigers to be in the top end of things. But the thing I want to say is that while the Tigers go out and they score 15 runs, we're looking at Seattle, Minnesota, Washington, and San Francisco, all teams that went out and also scored above 10 runs. Now, the only team on that was on my radar, really, of those was San Francisco. They were in a ball, they had a ballpark upgrade. They had a nice pitching matchup. You know, I can confidently say that that's I only had 50% of these high scoring teams on my radar, which means that the industry, you know, in general really wasn't interested in Minnesota or Seattle, who both really took those pitchers to task. So in Vegas wasn't on them either. So I think that the point is that on these large slates, these points of leverage are really, really important. And if you're seeing a combination of the fact that half of the teams that were projected to go off, and half of the teams, the industry in Vegas just really didn't even see it coming. And, you know, Seattle, no one saw Seattle scoring 12 runs against Odorizzi. In fact, Odorizzi actually had some decent numbers and people were interested in him. We talked about him on the show. You know, nobody saw Minnesota doing that against J.C. Ramirez. You know, there were some indications that maybe J.C. Ramirez had some flaws against lefties. Okay, sure. But, you know, they really took advantage of that against J.C. Ramirez out of the bullpen, or excuse me, in the comeback start. And Pittsburgh, by the way, also 12 runs. So, I mean, the point is, and in Pittsburgh, that was totally out of left field. Point is that there seems to be on these larger slates, Vegas is going to have a beat, and the industry is going to have a beat on the offenses that, based on just the sheer numbers, the evidence that we have, the things that we know, they should be able to do, you know, what you want your stack to do, which is go off for six or more runs. You know, two plus home runs throughout the lineup, multiple runs, multiple hits, multiple walks throughout the lineup, which is why you stack, by the way. I mean, this is why you stack. Now, you see a lot of people who choose not to stack every once in a while. But, you know, frankly, this is why you stack. And the evidence is very clear as to why you stack. And if you go look through the top tiers of lineups, more often than not, you're going to see stacks. If nothing else, you're going to see pairs of players, you know, and it's necessary. It works. It's you know, it's why it's an industry standard as far as, you know, because stacking works. I mean, the Detroit stack worked. It worked like a charm, whether it was 1, 2, 3, 4, whether it was one, you know, whether it was two through five, whatever it was, it worked. That's why you stack, because when one, you know, when that team starts to go off, you want all that correlation, and it just, it's going to work out for you. My point is that, you know, and I continue to emphasize this idea, is that you can mix your chalk with a spot that you feel like is not as predictable. okay? And in that situation is when you have a combination of a predictable upside, you know, that's going to Strasburg plus the Tigers. Tigers had the highest implied run total on the slate. Strasburg was one of the highest favorites pitchers. He had a great situation against Oakland. We knew we added all that up, right? Fine. Okay, great. That's half of my lineup. The other half was the Tampa Bay under 3%. Having that leverage, and even though they didn't perform that well, got a little bit lucky. The point is that you're mixing and matching your leverage with what industry standards in Vegas are saying. And when you do that, you're increasing your upside as far as having a situation where having a situation that other people aren't exposed to. And so I think, you know, it's a challenge. It's a challenge to find those spots where you want to take risks, but it's worth it because, you know, I was in a great position. You know, the Tigers were, they weren't chalky, but they were popular. Let's say that they were above 10% for most of them. The Rays weren't, they were all below 3% and below. That helped me tremendously. The end of the night when those home runs came through, that helped me tremendously. And I think that that is something that we really have to consider as far as lineup construction is concerned, you know, or else you're really depending too much on luck. You know, so we're using analytics for the one half of our lineup. We're deciding, making decisions driven by Vegas, driven by the industry, driven by what we see as far as the numbers are going, driven by what you hear on the show, as far as, you know, me just reading statistics and drawing conclusions. And then you're using the other half of your lineup to take some chances, mix and match, make some decisions that, you know, can work out for you. So, you know, I think it's important. And then you create your player pool and you mix and match in that way. And, you know, you get leverage on the field, but you also get upside that's predictable, you know, because people that are smarter than us are saying so. So it's an interesting way to consider building lineups. I think it's something that we have to consider to try, you know, continue to try and do, mix and match those spots. That said, we have a nice sized slate tonight, 7 games on the slate tonight. You know, getting ready for those Tuesday slates. That Tuesday slate's going to be a monster. It's always 15 games, so we'll get ready for that. That should be really nice. There's some good series coming up, and the weather's starting to get warmer in some parts of the country. Something to keep your eye on. You're going to see these Vegas totals go up, and that's primarily because you're going to continue to see Vegas being able to identify the fact that there are certain pitchers who are exploitable by certain teams. In addition to the fact that you are going to see the weather get warmer, which really affects the flight of the ball. I mean, ask the Tigers. It was warm in Michigan this weekend, and what happened? All that ex-WOBA stuff that they have been dealing with, where everyone is like, the Tigers are just unlucky. The Tigers are just unlucky. Everyone in advanced numbers is like, guys, the Tigers are going to start crushing the ball. And that's why I kept saying we have to keep going back to them. We have to keep going back to them. We have to trust them. It caught up with them. You know, 15 runs and 7 runs yesterday. And then Saturday they raked as well. So, you know, these numbers don't lie. Eventually guys catch up to what they're supposed to be doing. So, all that review in mind, let's go ahead and jump into tonight's slate. Alright, so we're starting off in Cincinnati, 9 runs projected as Carmo goes up against Asher Wojciechowski. Carmo is the favorite in this one, but it's interestingly enough, the Reds are still projected over 4 runs. We're going to have a little bit of weather to be concerned about in this one. 20% chance of rain. The nice thing is it's going to kind of sputter out towards the 8-9 o'clock hour and get a little bit lighter. So it's a little bit earlier in the afternoon, there's going to be rain, but imagine that they will be prepared for that, cover, tarp, all that good stuff, and then it'll kind of start to slowly reduce itself. Obviously, you got to like Carmo in this spot, but Vegas is telling us that he's not going to be completely immune to the Cincinnati Reds, especially with the wind straight out at center at only 7 miles per hour. Obviously, that's not that big of a deal, but it's better than the wind blowing in, right? So, interesting spot here, 79 degrees, you know, not incredibly warm, but pretty nice night. Philly at Atlanta, 10 runs projected here. Here's the problem. You guys know I live in I live in this area in the southeast Tennessee, near Atlanta. And I'm not kidding when I say it's literally been raining for about 36 hours. And it's raining right now, and my basement's probably flooding again. That's been fucking awesome, by the way, dealing with a flooding basement. The best. So fun. Can't always, you know, just great having to literally walk down there and rake water everywhere. Kill me. Anyway, if this game goes highest total on the night, 10 runs projected here, Braves projected for over 5. This is one of those spots. Vegas, the industry, everybody's looking at the Braves and saying, listen, the Braves against Nick Pivetta is a good spot. Now, the Phillies against Bartolo Colon, also a great spot. Phillies offense has been sputtering, but they get a nice break with Bartolo here. 4.8 runs projected for them. So if this game goes, 50% chance of rain basically throughout the entire game, it's definitely a good spot to have some exposure. So we'll keep an eye on it. Who knows? I mean, like I said, it's just been gross in this neck of the woods, man. So much water. Giants Brewers, 8.5 runs projected here. Samardzija versus Junior Guerra. What's interesting to me is that Samardzija is just a little bit of a favorite. Says a lot. I mean, Samardzija's basic numbers like ERA and wins and losses, you look at him, you go, this guy sucks. He doesn't. The advanced numbers are really, really good. And this could be a spot where the advanced numbers catch up and he has a really nice outing. That said, we have seen the Brewers hit righties hard. Ask Jake DeGrom. I like Samardzija in this spot. I keep going back to him because his advanced numbers are excellent. His walk rate is elite. I just don't know if he's going to get lucky in this spot. You know, it's honestly been an unlucky situation for him, and he's been in better spots where we feel like he could really limit the damage. And he's like, he does this mixed bag thing where he, like, you know, he gives up home runs and then he strikes out. You know, he'll strike out, he'll give up 2 home runs in an inning, and then he'll go out and he'll strike out 3 and back to back to back. I don't know what to expect. He's very unpredictable. That said, the numbers tell us that he's an elite pitcher on this slate. 7.5 runs projected in Chicago. Very interesting that they're saying that, and it makes sense. The weather is not great. 60 degrees. Compare that to the rest of the slate. It's not great. The other thing that I want to continue to emphasize and dismiss, not dismiss, but I want to make it very clear. If you guys are listening to this show, everybody goes to Chicago and they're like, oh, Wrigley Field, elite hitters park. It is like any other park susceptible to wind. And when the wind is blowing out at a very serious rate, yes, you have a pretty solid park historically. That said, it's not that much better than a lot of other parks. When you consider park factor, it really isn't historically. And in fact, recent data has suggested that that park factor advantage that used to be, you know, the Wrigley of the 70s and 80s, where that wind would come off of Lake Michigan and just, whoo, that ball would sail, has totally changed. And that's because the construction in and around Wrigley Field, if you know the area at all, it's just booming. There are huge apartment buildings, big billboards and signs, and they've added things in the outfield, the scoreboard, etc. It reduces the effects of the wind. The ball doesn't sail or carry as much. It does still catch, yes, and it's still an old small ballpark. There are pockets where, and there are days when that ball, as long as you hit it high enough, it's going to go. Today's not one of those days. 60 degrees, 15 miles an hour, wind blowing in. That's why you have the low run total here. Dane Straley versus Eddie Butler, and it is almost a pick 'em. Eddie Butler, the slight favorite. That must just be home field advantage. Straley pitched a gem last time out, and the Slack channel, we were on him. Dan the Man Straley had 10 Ks against the Philadelphia Phillies. Pitched one of his better games. He's been trending in the right direction. You got to like, I don't think you like Straley in this situation because you don't know which Cubs hitters. I mean, any one of these hitters, 1 through 6, can take him yard. Because, you know, and that concerns me. You can get ugly fast with this Cubs lineup. You know, I mean, they hit Clayton Kershaw, but then they can't go hit Luis Perdomo. Like, I don't know what to make of this Cubs team. So I'm not touching this. I'm not touching this game. Combination of weather, low run projection. I'm just not interested. And Eddie Butler's kind of been a goofy pitcher. Like, just doesn't give up a lot of damage. Huh. 9 runs, 9.5 runs projected as the Astros go to Kauffman. This one, gentlemen, is something to keep your eye on. 88 degrees in Kansas City. Kansas City gets hot, boy. 88 degrees. Wind blowing in a little bit of humidity there. No rain in the forecast. And Vegas likes this game for the Astros. Michael Fiers going up against Ian Kennedy. We know Fiers. He's a home run machine. He's a home run machine. Lots of hard pitches, but he is a home run machine. And his last start was a little bit tilting against Minnesota. We thought for sure that they would be able to get a hold of him. He destroyed them. He went out and scored 46 fantasy points against Minnesota. So, you know, Fiers seems to maybe either be figuring it out or limiting the damage. Not really sure what to say there. I can't say I'm going to have too many Royals, but there are a couple lefties that I want to keep an eye on. Moustakas, for example, is at a very nice price, and Vegas has them projected for 4.5 runs. But the Astros, excellent spot here. You're going to have some Astros tonight against Ian Kennedy, who just gets hit hard. Man gets hit hard. That's it. That's all there is to say. It's that simple. Blue Jays Athletics, 8 runs projected here. J.A. Happ going up against Sean Manaea. And Happ, interestingly enough, is the favorite in this one, but I think this line is going to move a little bit more towards a pick'em. Toronto on the road, their number's not as good. Massive park downgrade. I like Manaea. That's my GPP spot, I think, tonight. I think Manaea is in an interesting position. Now, obviously, a healthy Blue Jays team is not something that we want to screw around with. They have been scoring some runs recently. They certainly have, but if we remember their last start against the lefty, Mr. CC Sabathia, I think his name was, we certainly were interested in him against CC. And CC really, really kind of broke our hearts in this one. And limited the damage. Now that said, they did score, 17. No, that's it. Oh, sorry. They lost that game. They scored 10 runs. Okay. So they haven't been, you know, filthy. And in fact, against left-handed pitching, yeah, this is interesting. Jordan Montgomery skunked them too. Jordan Montgomery says, so, you know, the lefties on the Yankees seem to be getting a hold of, getting a hold of Toronto. So I like Manaea in this spot. You know, they're coming on that massive road trip, massive flight across the country. They just played yesterday. It kind of always feels like a little bit of a letdown spot for teams when they have to come off that big travel day and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, park factor, all that kind of stuff. You put it together. I personally like Manaea in this spot. And then you got Nationals, Dodgers. This will be a fun series just from a baseball perspective. 8 runs projected here at Dodgers Stadium. Gio Gonzalez going up against Hyunjin Ryu. Ryu had a decent start last time out, but let's remember they're limiting his innings, and he has been up and down. But he is favored here against Gio, which is interesting to me. I mean, if there's anything that the Dodgers don't do well, it's hit lefties, and Gio pitched a gem against he's pitched a couple gems against some left-hand heavy teams recently, San Francisco and Seattle. I mean, he looked excellent. Last time he got blown up was that Baltimore game, and, you know, everything else has been pretty consistent for Gio. You know, I don't think it's the worst spot. If you want to look into Gio Gonzalez, I think he will come with pretty low ownership, especially considering he is the dog in this one. A road dog is an interesting spot. So, I don't know. I mean, I think he has a similar range of outcomes as a lot of guys. He's just the price is not excellent. You know, I would rather go Manaea at 7-7 than Gio at 8-7, I think, personally. Anyway, all right, that is it. That's what we got. 7 games on this slate. Real nice size slate. We can really dig into all the different angles. So let's go ahead and do so, and let's get into the player breakdown. Who do you love? All right, starting with the arms, I think the obvious spot, you know, people are going to play him because he's not too too pricey at 10,000. It's Carmo. He's got Cincinnati on the road at Great American Ballpark. I don't love the matchup. I got to be honest with you. The left-handed power in Cincinnati worries me. The power in general in Cincinnati always worries me. You know, Cincinnati, I put Cincinnati in this bucket with Milwaukee and Toronto, I think. They are teams that if this offense clicks and it gets going in a game, they're going to score 7 or 8 runs. You know, they're not like an exploitable offense. That said, there are games when, you know, they just don't show up. And I think that, you know, Carmo is in a good spot because he's been one of the most consistent pitchers that we've had on the season. He's got a 26% K rate, 11% swinging strike rate, ground ball rate above 50%. He's only allowing 33% hard contact, an XFIP of 3.6. He's excellent. He's been very consistent. His ERA and his XFIP are matching. Everything is clean about him. His BABIP is very solid. The splits versus lefties are a little bit of a problem. And you got to worry about Joey Votto. You got to worry about Schebler. And we know Billy is a Billy's a switch hitter at the top of the line. So you got to worry a little bit about that. That said, he is excellent against righties. And Cincinnati has a ton of them. His K rate goes up to 30%. His walk rate goes down to 5. His XFIP goes down to 2.7. So you really have to like the fact that, okay, you get around Votto and Schebler as the power bats, and you have a really, really, really nice time with the rest of this lineup. And, you know, Cozart and Duvall and Suarez and Peraza and Messeraco, the catcher. I always feel bad when I can't say names properly. I apologize. And by the way, shout out to Arbelson telling me, it was somebody in the Slack chat, Giants fan, messaged me and was like, "Hey Sean, Ty Block's name is Ty Block, not Ty Blatch." I didn't want to be, you know, told you so, but I was like, dude, thank you for telling me. You're supposed to get people's names. If you talk about people every day in this industry, you should be pronouncing their names correctly. It matters. I appreciate that. So if I'm saying a name wrong, you guys who are fans of these teams, let me know. Broadcasters usually have the right pronunciation. So it's always helpful to get that context. Anyway, Carmo, the lefties, you got to get around them. But then the rest of that lineup is righties. I mean, you're talking about 2 power lefties and then 7 more righties and a pitcher. I love that for Carmo. Okay, so, you know, and you add to the fact that the big issue with left-handed bats, the reason that his Sierra goes up and his XFIP goes up, I mean, he does give up that's where he does give up his home runs, by the way. He does give up his home runs to lefties. Fine, you get a dinger or two. Okay, all right, earned runs are part of the game. It's the walk rate, which that doesn't bother me. I mean, fine, walk Joey Votto. He's not going to hit a dinger. You know, you can walk Joey Votto and live to see another day with the rest of these righties. You can walk Scott Schebler and live to see another day with the rest of these righties and be fine. You know, that doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me at all. Well, I mean, it's not a good sign for a pitcher, but I think it's not as scary as some of the other things that some of the other fire you might be playing with with some of your other pitchers. So I think if you want to pivot, I got to talk about Shark. Samardzija has been very difficult to get right this year, but, you know, I think that might be part of why we have some leverage here. He's got high upside. He's got a difficult matchup. And, you know, I'm not going to lie. Like, I still have PTSD from the DeGrom start last week when I literally had, I had over 2/3 of my lineups had DeGrom, at least. I had one non-DeGrom lineup. And, you know, that was tilting. That was so tilting. And that was the night that Scherzer went out and, like, threw a complete game. Remember that? I don't want to remember it, but I do. Anyway, he's got Milwaukee. You know, the thing about it is okay, his numbers are phenomenal. And if we look at the differential, Casey Bogeslaw tweeted out today, MLB Barrel Alert, shout out to Casey Bogeslaw. Follow, please follow, like. All that boat barrel chart. I retweet it every day. It's one of the best resources that we have. His barrel frip ERA differential is one of the highest in the majors. It's -2, which indicates to me that the quality of the ball he is throwing is greater than the result. Okay, this is the same with the Tigers. Their ex-WOBA was higher than their actual WOBA by a massive margin. When you have that, eventually those two numbers are going to meet, which means that the real-life result is going to improve, and the advanced numbers are going to align with the real-life results. It's just a matter of time. That's what these advanced statistics show us. So in that respect, I like Samardzija. I think that he's got to get something going his way. He's a 28% K rate, 11% swinging strike rate, 3% walk rate. Sierra, XFIP, both below 3. That's phenomenal. And that's primarily because of that very, very, very low walk rate. Yes, he's given up a dinger or two in every single game. Well, not every single game, but most of his starts, he gives up a dinger or two. Okay? I don't mind it. I don't mind it. Because you're dealing with, you know, a guy who has some elite stuff here, and every once in a while, he's going to get one to leave the park. The thing you have to be aware of is the fact that Milwaukee has the left-handed bats. They have Thames and Shaw. I mean, that is the two dangerous pairing. You get Thames and Shaw right there are a problem. And if Samardzija just struggles, he struggles with left-handed bats. Okay, his home run rate, his fly ball rate all go up to kind of what I would call cautiously optimistic, kind of flirting with disaster territory. You know, not quite so bad that you're like, oh God, no. Oh God, the splits are so bad. But like, bad enough that you're like, oh gosh, okay, this isn't good. So you got to worry about Thames and Shaw. You do. I mean, I'm not going to be lying. It's the same with DeGrom. You had to worry about Thames, you know. You still have to worry about Eric Thames. I realize that he's cooled off a little bit. You do have to worry about him, though, because if he gets one, it's going. I think if you want to start Samardzija and you've got multiple lineups, take a hedge pairing of Thames and Shaw. You know, just do it. Take a little hedge pairing of Thames and Shaw in another lineup, you know, in a Carmo lineup or something like that, so that if, for whatever reason, they blow up Samardzija, You have the guys who are going to be doing the exploding, most likely, at the 2 and the 4 hole. And they're very reasonably priced. Shaw at 4-1 is not great, but Thames at 3-1 is pretty good, you know. And even though Thames blew up DeGrom the other day, you know, and he hit a dinger the other... He hit one against the Dodgers. But he struggles. He hit a couple rough spots here. In the series against the Brewers. I mean, it's, you know, it's feast or famine for Eric Thames, really, to be honest with you. Those strikeouts are catching up with him. So I think it's a good idea to start some Samardzija. But I also think that if you're going to have a Samardzija lineup, have one Brewers stack, have one Brewers pairing, maybe with Manaea or something like that. I know it's, the thing that I hate is that that's your first and third, right? If you want to have first and third exposure kind of uniform across your lineup, you want to have your power bats uniform, which is something that I like to do. I try to keep my power bats uniform because if one of them goes yard, then all my lineups are going to do well. Anyway, but I understand it. Or you just don't play with fire and you say, fine, if Samardzija goes 8 innings and 8 Ks, and fine. That's fine. I think you can go down to Sean Manaea. I mentioned this, okay? He's got Toronto, and he's at home. He's quietly been, like, really elite recently, and he's had two massive, massive numbers on FanDuel recently, which I think people are going to start to catch on to, right? If you want to do the high-cost stacks, if you want to stack the Astros, for example, which I do. You guys know me. I love the Astros. Then I'm going to start some Manaea. I mean, I really am. I think he's an ideal GPP play. The cost is going to allow you access to some high-priced bats. And this Oakland staff has really seen some good starts. I mean, guys like Manaea, guys like, I was going to say Kendall Graveman, but it's not Kendall Graveman. It's the guy with the really old school name, the really old school Oakland starter, Sonny Gray. What a great name. Anyway, Manaea, listen to these numbers, and they're going to sound a lot like someone that I just talked about. 27% K rate, 14% swinging strike rate. XFIP Sierra of 3.6. You check that with the batted ball data, 2.3% barrel rate, 50% ground ball rate, 33% hard contact rate. It's almost exactly uniform with Carmo. honestly, it's almost exactly, the advanced statistics align almost perfectly with Carmo. The only thing that's really different is he has a little bit more of a walk rate. That's it. I mean, it's almost the exact same numbers as Carmo, and he actually has a better swinging strike rate than Carmo by 3 percentage points, which is a big deal. I mean, think about a pitcher that has an 8% swinging strike rate versus an 11% swinging strike rate. That's a big deal. That's a big difference. That goes from clearly below average to clearly above average. So 3 percentage points matters here. Manaea is in a very interesting spot. The matchup with Toronto, it's not perfect, especially with Josh Donaldson back on the lineup. You know, these guys can mash. They got guys who can hit lefties. The thing is that they haven't. CC Sabathia and Jordan Montgomery smoked them. I like this spot for Manaea. I think that it's, you know, you might be playing with fire, but that east to west trip, ballpark downgrade, and I think this is really interesting. Let's not overlook this. Rogers Center is a +112. The O Coliseum is an 87. And remember, 100 is average, right? Like 100 is the median. This is like WRC plus. Above 100, it's good. That means it's above average. Below 100, below average. So Oakland Coliseum, 87. That's top 10 best to bottom 10. It's a big shift from the top third to the bottom third. So, you know, when you add to that, you look at the Blue Jays as a whole, all their batting metrics go down on the road. OPS, slugging, everything. It all goes down on the road. I think that's a good sign for Manaea. They're solidly below average team against left-handed pitching as well, against left-handed pitching. I believe they are like an 87 WRC plus. Let me double check that. 85, excuse me. Right in the same neighborhood as a team like Oakland, Philadelphia, Tampa Bay. That's their company there. Would you start Manaea against Philadelphia? The answer is probably yes. Probably yes. Then we should think about starting him here. I think it's a good spot. It's definitely a good spot. Strikeout rate, 23% too. You know, they swing the bat. It's not, you know, the highest, but it's definitely better than average. So I don't mind going after Toronto here. I think it's a good spot to go after them with Manaea, who is only 7,700. And that's the advantage you have there, is you can really pay for all the bats that you want. Speaking of bats and bats that we want, the studs that you want on this slate are Houston. And on a 7-game slate with Ian Kennedy on the opposite side, people are going to know about Houston. The nice thing is that you've got some other high totals in some obvious spots, like that Philly-Atlanta game. So maybe you'll drive some ownership away. But this is a great spot. But these guys are expensive. They're all almost 4K or above. They've got Ian Kennedy. Great follow on Twitter by guys, Jamie Calandro. He does fantasy team advice. He's a great guy, works hard. And he tweeted out last night, Mike Fears versus Ian Kennedy in a hot Kansas City ballpark. I'm going to set the over under for home runs at 8. And I said, I'll take the over, Jamie. It's true, man. I mean, Mike Fears, we know, is a home run machine, but Ian Kennedy, also a hard contact savant, gives up way too much. Vegas is projecting them for 5 runs for a reason. He throws the ball well, but gosh, 20% K rate, 12% walk rate, and the hard contact and fly ball rate are both above 40. 40% hard contact, 47% fly ball rate for Kennedy. You know, the 12% walk rate too. So it's like, well, if you're not striking that many people out, Kennedy, they're either hitting you or you're walking them. It's a disaster. The barrel rate is above average, according to Casey Bogoslaw's breakdown on barrel FIP. Not above average, excuse me. It's above 8%. I said average, which is well above average. The good news for us about the Astros, his splits are totally even. So it's righties and lefties. Literally 1 through 4, very obvious. Springer, Reddick, Altuve, Correa, love them. They're expensive. That's the problem. So how do you find leverage? How do you find cost relief? You know, I have no problem with, maybe 2, 4, 6, 7. Maybe you get a little salary relief, but down at 6 and 7 with, You know, maybe Yuli Gurriel is in the lineup. Maybe Marwin Gonzalez, who actually Marwin is ridiculously expensive too. Beltran is a little bit cheaper. He'll probably be in the six hole. 5 through 8, fine. You know, hopefully Brian McCann plays. He's actually the cheapest Astro and Yuli. If Yuli and Brian McCann play and they're 7-8, you better believe I'm going to have some Yuli-Brian McCann lineups to get a little salary relief and a little bit of differentiation. Because those guys can leave the yard. We know that. We know that. They're very much in play. And I think, you know, we keep our eye on the catcher situation because Gattis has been DHing, but then they've been, you know, switching in Beltran and Marwin and, you know, all that kind of stuff because everybody's healthy now. But, you know, you've had Centeno in there as well. So McCann, Centeno, Gattis, see who's in there, figure out where they are in the lineup. You can definitely attack them with catcher. I think, by the way, if you want to attack the opposite side of this ball, you want to attack Kansas City, I think that's very viable. You know, if you want to hit, you know, Mike Fears, you got to do it with power, okay? Because he gives up the home runs. Like, he had a really nice start last time. He's not just going to get knocked around for singles. But if he's going to get hit, he's going to get hit for power against righties. That's Moustakas, Bonifacio, and Sal Perez. Those are the ones that you want. Moustakas, Bonifacio, Sal Perez. Moustakas at 3-1, that's a great price for him. It's a really nice price for Moustakas at third base. It's a very nice price for one guy who could really take this guy yard. Now, Bonifacio at 3K is in a great spot as well. I just don't love the sixth spot, but I think you can pair him with Sal Perez. If you want to pay 3K for Sal or 3.5 for Sal Perez, don't mind it. Sal Perez is a beast. He leaves the yard. He's an animal. He's an animal. So I have no problem with Sal Perez in this spot. And in fact, looking at the home numbers for these guys, Moose actually has some of the best home numbers that are out there. Sal Perez, not bad. Whit Merrifield actually playing well at home also. Interesting. Yeah, but Moose, Bonifacio, Sal Perez, those are the guys you want against a righty like this. So, you know, something to keep in mind. Something to keep in mind if you want the opposite side of the ball. Because we know Fire Fears gives up homers. And you know, Kansas City has been pretty bad this year. But they're certainly better against right-handed pitching than they are against left-handed pitching. But, God, that's not saying much. Ugh. I never feel good about rostering Kansas City. Although, you know, Moose and Sal Perez don't scare me because they just kind of have been the only bright spot on that roster. If you want to save some money, guys, you got to get some grout stacks, some lower cost stacks that are in a plus situation. And it's St. Louis, right? Obviously, against Asher Wojciechowski, they're going to be popular. People know that Wojciechowski is a gas can. He's got a Sierra above 5, above 40% hard contact. He struggles with fly balls also. Ballpark upgrade for St. Louis and Great American Ballpark. St. Louis can't hit lefties, but they can hit righties, and they've been fine. You know, not like blowing the cover off the ball, but they've been fine against righties. So you start with Fowler, Carpenter, Yurko. Those are the guys that I trust the most. Those are the guys who've been getting it done. They've been pretty consistent. Piscotty, he got it going a little bit yesterday. He was out of the lineup for a little while, family issue, but he's got it going. He sent one yesterday in the Cubs game. Woj, he's really terrible against righties, which is nice. You know, the home run to fly ball rate is 27% against righties. So I think if there's anybody that I'm really like lock, give me this guy, it's definitely Yurko, who we know hits righties really well. I think Jed Yurko is probably my favorite spot on St. Louis in this one. You know, but, you know, obviously Piscotty 3-4, that's a pretty good price. But I don't know, Dexter Fowler 3-4 just feels, you know, more reliable. Like he hasn't blanked you. This is actually pretty impressive. Holy shit. You look at his game log. Okay. All the way up for the entire last 4 weeks, he's gone only three performances where he's blanked you. It is zero. And I don't even know, maybe he didn't start those games. I'm not sure. Three performances where he got you a zero. He's just been very consistent as a leadoff batter. You know, he gets on base and, you know, that's what you want. You know, that's what you want out of your leadoff batter. You want him to get you, if you're paying for that, that's what you're paying for. You're paying for a guy to not get you a zero. And that's why you love those extra plate appearances there. So I don't mind the Cardinals. I think people will be on the Cardinals in this spot. They always attract a lot of attention, and in this one, they should definitely attract a lot of ownership. The other game, though, that you can go to salary relief and you can pivot, that's even cheaper, is this Atlanta-Philadelphia game, Pivetta and Cologne. This is salary relief, okay? The Phils, if the Phils can't hit Cologne, then I think the Phils should all be demoted to AAA. Let's move the entire club down to AAA. It's over. You guys suck. Just let's go back to the era of Philly sadness, where everything is just sad for Philadelphia fans, and you guys are throwing batteries at people and that kind of thing. I don't know what to say. If they can't hit Cologne, we got a problem here. Okay. But it's Cologne. All right. He's been bad. And I think the thing that best exemplifies what Bartolo can't do is his 4.9% swinging strike rate. He just can't get anybody out. They hit him. He gets walked a lot. He walks a lot. You know, he doesn't walk a lot of people, excuse me, but he gets hit a lot. You know, BABIP is elevated, et cetera. Against right-handed pitching, it's mostly Aaron Althier, Daniel Nava, and Andrew Knapp. Those are the only ones who really have the numbers this year. Okay, but they're all pretty cold. Like, none of them hit this weekend. It was pretty rough. Okay. So, in fact, you look at it by the numbers this weekend, guys, you really got to pay attention to who's actually seeing the ball in Philadelphia, because you don't know, you don't trust anybody. So, like, being really cold is a problem, or being hot is a good thing for these guys. So that has been Hernandez and Herrera. So, you know, they were batting 1-2. They're projected to be batting 1-2 in this spot again. I don't mind Hernandez and Herrera in this spot. They're cheap. It's 1-2 against a bad pitcher. I'll take that volume. I'll take the volume, because the volume I trust. You know, you get 5 plate appearances, that's a good thing. Plus, they clearly were hitting over the weekend. I think that's a good spot for them in the San Francisco series. They had some nice games. So the plate appearances are certainly what I want. I think the Braves might even be in a better spot than the Phillies here. Pivetta is also giving up a ton of hard contact. You know, he's got a great K rate, almost 23% for this kid, but way too much contact. He's as bad as Wojciechowski, over 40 in those categories. The Braves have been better. Recently, they woke up a little bit in that Cincinnati series after that Friday night game was really tilting. They're coming home. So it's a left-handed bats in SunTrust that you want to get yourself involved with. Inciarte, Markakis, and Adams. Interestingly enough, though, skip Markakis, because Markakis, the numbers aren't really working out for him. And it's actually Matt Kemp who's been hitting righties better this year than Markakis. So I'm not that interested. You know, Markakis and Kemp are usually 3-4. Give me Kemp over Markakis, even though Markakis is cheap. But for me, I really like Inciarte and Adams. It should be one or Inciarte is either 1 or 2 usually in the lineup, depending on where Phillips is. And Adams is usually 4 or 5. So I don't mind that. You know, I don't mind those guys. 1-5. That's not ideal, but those are who I want for cost and power upside. Inciarte and Kemp. If you can get Matt Kemp, that's a nice 1.35, and he has a ISO above 240 against right-handed pitching. He's just expensive. $3,900 for Matt Kemp feels pretty pricey when I can get George Springer for that much. I'd almost rather have George Springer, especially with the rain possibilities there. So that's that. All right. Let's take all this information. Let's head over to FanDuel, see if we can build ourselves a little bit of a lineup. Okay, so, if we're starting with Carmo, which I really do think we should, I mean, I like the consistency. You know, obviously, I will happily build a lineup, guys, with Sean Manaea. But I think we'd start with Carmo. And at 10K, you're going to need salary relief. So my immediate instinct is to go to this Philadelphia-Atlanta game, and I'm just going to take the guys that are inexpensive that I trust, okay? And from the Atlanta side, it's Matt Adams, and it is Ender Inciarte. $3,200 for Inciarte, $2,800 for Matt Adams. So those are pretty solid prices for guys who are in the top half of the order against a bad pitcher, both lefties against Pivetta, who struggles with lefties. So certainly good opportunity there for Adams and Inciarte. And looking at this, Pivetta's xFIP goes up against lefties. The K rate goes down. The walk rate goes up against lefties. That's where you want to be. Interesting. Against righties, his hard contact rate goes up. So that maybe is a little bump for Matt Kemp there. So that's interesting to keep in mind. And then you even want some more salary relief. If you're going 1-2, and like I said, the only way I'm going to go Philadelphia is I'm taking the top two guys right there. It's Herrera and Hernandez. If they are 1-2, then that's who I want. Second base and an outfielder. Herrera is very cheap at 2-5. And Hernandez at 3-1. If he's batting leadoff, that's a pretty good price for a leadoff batter. You fill in your second baseman, it's not a total punt. You know, I think that those two guys are very interesting. So there I have exposure to that Philadelphia-Atlanta game. I get a little bit of salary relief. And then I want to go over to this Houston-Kansas City game and get some action there. And I think what I'm going to try to do is I'm going to get one of these outfielders. Now, the problem is that I also really want Carlos Correa. Like, I desperately want Carlos Correa. So if I take Carlos Correa, I'm going to have to take Beltran because I can't afford a catcher if I go up to Reddick, for example. That's who I would go to. Reddick, you had 2-4. Reddick, Altuve, Correa. But I can't afford all of them. So I'm going to go with a 4-5. Hopefully Beltran's in that 5 hole. And then I got Correa, Beltran. Correa 4,300, Beltran at 3,800. You know, it's not a great price for Carlos Beltran, who hasn't been excellent, but this is a good situation. They turn this lineup over, he's going to get volume. So definitely has some interest there in that. So Correa, Beltran, that pair there. And then at catcher, I'm punting. And I think Luke Mayo will be in there at catcher because of the injury to Russell Martin's neck. So we'll see. You know, I always wait to kind of fill in catcher at the bottom. If Cam Rupp is in there, I'll take him. But he hasn't been catching. It's been Andrew Knapp. He's been catching recently. So we'll see. We'll see who's in the lineup here against, for various catcher spots, and we'll punt catcher. Now, let's say, for example, that I, you know, wanted to go down to Manaea because I really wanted to stack Houston at the core of what I'm doing. Oh, by the way, third base is Mike Moustakas. I like that a lot. One off Moustakas. So this is interesting because it's just three different pairs of bats and then a punt, catcher, and a one off third baseman. But it's all the offenses that are a combination of good spots. So, you know, not to mention everybody's in the top half of the lineup. I think this is a pretty good place to start, to be honest with you. But let's see what happens if I want to stack Houston and go with Manaea. I think it'll work. And let's do that. Okay, so we're going to get Manaea in there. Plenty of money left to go ahead and stack up Houston bats. So I'm going to start. I'm going to try. Let's do this. I'm going to go two. I'm going to go with the Reddick at the 2 hole. I'm going to go with Altuve at the 4. I'm going to skip Altuve, okay? And the reason that I'm going to do that is just cost. And then I'm going to try to get one of these catchers. And hopefully Brian McCann is in there. And hopefully Marwin Gonzalez is in there. And so what I've done is I've stacked the middle. And hopefully I have a little bit of leverage over guys who play Springer and Altuve. I don't know. I don't know that it will. But I also get a little bit of salary relief by stacking McCann in there. And then I have 2,900 left here I have a second base, third base, and outfield. Now, if I want to keep my player pool tight, then that second base and outfield is pretty obvious to me. At second base, I'm going to go with Hernandez. Outfield, I'm going to go with Herrera. And what I'm doing there is I'm creating overlap, right? If I play the Manaea line, well, it correlates well with my other line, right? I have exposure to these guys in the same way. And then I can continue that exposure with a guy like, I can go back to my third baseman and go back to Moustakas at 31. He fits in there. And then I have one more outfielder at 3,200 that I have access to. And I'm interested in Bonifacio here. This is where I get my Bonifacio exposure. He's 3K. I can certainly do that. But in general, at 3-2 left for this final outfielder, I could go Inciarte, too. That's a nice spot for Inciarte. I could also go Aaron Althier at 3-3, just change my catcher. But let's just say for the sake of argument. Actually, hold on. Let me see if I can do this real quick. Hold on, I got another idea. Let me try something. Let's see if I can get some St. Louis exposure in here. Let's see if we get some. Let's see if I can get Yurko and. Oof, Yurko is pricey. But if I go Yurko and Fowler, then yeah, I punt catcher again with Luke Mayo at 2,200. And that's, you know, I mean, fine. Luke Mayo against Sean Manaea, but that's not the end of the world. You know, if I'm punting catcher, I'm doing that to create access to upside in the rest of my lineup. And I like this, actually. So at the core of what I'm doing here, I have the Houston stack. I have Marwin, Correa, and Reddick. That's 2-4-6, hopefully. That's hopefully 2-4-6. We'll see what that looks lineup looks like. It may end up changing out Marwin is what it might be. But that's 2-4-6, middle of that lineup. And then I have Fowler and Yurko, two of my favorite bats from the St. Louis game. And then I have the pair of Philadelphia guys for salary relief at Hernandez and Odubel Herrera, who I have in some of my other lineups as, you know, one and two. I think that's one thing, guys. If you're paying down for players, make sure that they're like, if you're paying below 3K for a player, make sure that he's in the one or the two hole. Make sure he's going to get the plate appearances there. Make sure that he's going to get the plate appearances. You always are going to, and the statistics prove this out. Historical data shows us that leadoff batters and one and two hole batters score more consistently over a season, more points. They just do. They just do. They score more because they have more plate appearances. You know, even if it's, you know, 3 points, they score more. And more frequently. So this is an interesting line with Manaea. I like this one. I'm going to save this one as well. Manaea, Luke Mayo, punting catcher. And we'll see who's in there to punt with. You know, I don't know. If it's camera up, I'd love that. But we'll see. He's been pretty awful recently. Marwin, Cesar Hernandez, Jed Yurko, Carlos Correa, Josh Reddick, Odubel Herrera, and Dexter Fowler. Got my two kind of favorite St. Louis guys in there. Got my Houston exposure in there, and got in my Philly guys for salary relief for the one and the two batter, hopefully. And you know, you don't trust that offense, but you do trust plate appearances and just volume of plate appearances. And if they get going, they turn that lineup over, those guys are going to be the ones who benefit the most. So it's not a bad spot either. All right, guys, that is it for me. Good luck in your contest tonight. Hey, Patreon.com/lineuplogic. Tell your friends. If you haven't written a review, please write a review. I appreciate you guys working hard here to make sure this show gets out to you every single day. And we are an independent outlet. We are not associated with any of the roto, any big guy, anything, anywhere. We're not. That's not us. It's just me and the boys grinding it. Josh and Ryan and KG. So certainly appreciate the support that you guys have given us over there at patreon.com and all the love on Twitter and via the reviews. Good luck in your contests, and we will see you tomorrow.